So what do we have on the agenda for today? Yesterday we began a sugya called Amida v'Talmud Torah. This is Gemara Megillah on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph. We want to continue with that. And you'll take a look at Simon Lamed Vav, which is the equivalent of page Shin Dalet. They don't want to write Shin Dalet, so they call it Dalet Shin. And I think I photocopied that for you today. You have that?
No.
Did I not?
Shin Bet.
Okay. Shin Bet. Okay, great. So we'll do the Shin Bet and we'll do the Shin Gimel. And then if we have time, we'll do Shin Dalet. So the Gemara tells us that from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of Rabbi Gamliel, they studied Torah Mu'umad. You know what? I think I'm going to make a change here because we'll appreciate this more if we start with a later Siman. So let's hold on to this page. And do you have a page that says Shin Yud Tes on it? Birchas HaMegillah?
Yes.
Oh, you do. Okay, so let's see if we can be Mahapek the Seder. Now this is also a sugya on Daf Chaf Aleph, but now we're not on Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, but rather on Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. And the Gemara says, "Makom shenogu levarich yivarich." Amar Rabbi lo shanu el lachreu, aval lefaneh mitzvah levarich. Di Omar Rabbi Yehuda Meshmul called mitzvah kulu levarich aleim over lasiyasan. So you may recall that in the past we've discussed the chiddush of Abaye, that even though it's a mitzvah derabbanon, nevertheless, there's a mitzvah levarich, and not only that it's a mitzvah levarich, but it's also a mitzvah levarich over lasiyasan. And it was a havamina that in the case of a mitzvah derabbanon, perhaps the bracha should be recited after the mitzvah. That was a long discussion we had in the past, and that's not for now. What we want to focus on now is the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Mayim mevarech." Rav Sheshes iklo lekami de Rav Ashi ubarach manach. So we have three brachas here. We have the mem, which represents Mikra Megillah. We have the nun, represents Sha'asa Nisim, and the ches, which represents Shehechi Yonah. And in this particular essay, the Gvuras Yitzchak wants to understand: are all these three brachos one entity of what we call a birchas hamitzvah? And that's why they're all subject to the halacha of over lasiyasan. Because Abaye is advocating that these three brachos be recited before the Kriyas HaMegillah, and therefore he seems to be subsuming all these three brachos under the category of Birchas HaMitzvah. Now that's a little bit odd, because the first bracha clearly is a classic Birchas HaMitzvah, Shekin Shana Mitzvosa Vitzivanu. The second bracha is Sha'asa Nisim. And the third bracha is even further away from the classic Birchas HaMitzvah, that's Shechiyanu. These last two brachas would seem to be what kind of brachos?
Shevach
Odaya. The Otsar Bir, the Im Abaye Omer Shechai Levarach Birchas HaMitzvah Faneo, Kemo B'chol HaMitzvah, Shevach Levarach Birchas HaMitzvah Faneo, Mai Shelas HaGemara Shuv Mai Mevarech. The Gemara asks the question, Shuv Mai Mevarech. Okay, we'll see that Gemara B'li Neder inside. Now, before we go on, I want to remind you of something that we discussed back in Hanukkah, for those who might remember. In the back of the Masifta, there's something called Otzer HaYunim. And he has 10 different pieces here of Iyunim. In the 10th, in the last one, he has a section which is called Geder Birchas HaRoeh. You remember that the Gemara says in Shabbos Daf Chav Gimel Aroa Ner Chanukah Mevarech Sha'asa Nisim Lavosein. What is the nature of this mitzvah to make a bracha on Re'iyah, and is the bracha itself connected to that mitzvah of Re'iyah? So I'll point out two or three paragraphs here. We're not going to go over the whole piece again, but he says, Yesh Levarer Ha'im Rakish Mizdamein Liros Chayav Levarech. In other words, if he happens to see someone's near Chanukah, he hasn't fulfilled his own obligation, then he makes this bracha. Oh, well, what the Gemara has in mind is Yesh Chiyuv Liros. In other words, there are two different mitzvahs in Ner Chanukah. There's one, a chiyuv of lahadlik, and another is a mitzvah of liros. V'im kein, if you'll assume that there's a chiyuv not only lahadlik, but also liros, then that justifies these two brachos. The first bracha is lahadlik on nadloka. The second bracha, shasad nisim, is a birchas haroah on the re'iyah, and he's obligated in the re'iyah. That's question number one. But then he has another paragraph, in which he quotes the Aruch HaShulchan. He says that the Re'iyah, even if I grant you that the Re'iyah is part of the mitzvah, he says, it's not a separate independent mitzvah called Re'iyah, but rather it's a chelek mi mitzvahs adlokas ner Chanukah. In other words, how do you fulfill the mitzvah adlokas ner Chanukah? It's a two-fold obligation. It's number one, the adlokah, number two, the Re'iyah. He says that since this is all part of one package, it makes sense that the Birchas HaRe'iyah should be before the Hadlaka, because it's all part of one mitzvah. And he quotes a Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua says that in Ner Chanukah we find what's called a Chovas Bayis and Ner Yishu Beso, whereas in other mitzvahs it seems that you have to do the mitzvah yourself. Now, if we add Re'iyah into the equation, then certainly Re'iyah requires that you see it yourself. And that's why the Gemara says that if you see a Ner Chanukah, you recite a bracha. In any event, the bottom line is that there are two ways of understanding Shasa Nisim in Ner Chanukah. Now, the Maimer that we're about to read has nothing to do with Ner Chanukah, but I just want to make a parallel here. That according to at least one approach in the Achronim, the bracha of Shasa Nisim is part of the mitzvah Adlaka, and therefore the overall Asiyasim requirement applies to Shasa Nisim. If we're going to graft that onto Megillah, then in Megillah we also have two different mitzvahs. We have to figure out what they are, and each mitzvah gets a bracha, but it's all part of one mitzvah. So that the Shasa Nisim is on the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, and therefore it requires overall Asiyasa.
Soloveitchik didn't possibly like the Ramah. He said Lahadlik, then you light the candles, and then Shasa Nisim.
I think what Rav Salovich was trying to accomplish was all the shitas. So he was able on the second night to be mekayim both shitas. He would recite the Shasa Nisim on the Adloka, meaning of the second Nair, and he would at the same time be yotzei the shitas that the mitzvah is on the bracha is on the Re'iyah, so that if he sandwiched it between the first Adloka and the second Adloka, he had the mitzvah of Re'iyah vis-a-vis the first candle, and now he has the Adloka vis-a-vis the second candle.
We saw that in Harei Kedem.
Is it in Harei Kedem? I remember we were looking for it. Did we find it at the end? I have the Harei Kedem if you want to find it, but I don't want to give a shiur today on Ner Chanukah. Maybe I do, but that's not what I'm going to do. So he says the following: Hanira Lomar, Al Pi Mashiyesh La'ayin in Birchas Shasa Nisim Choshev Birchas HaMitzvah. Shemitzvahs kriyas hamegillah mechayevis birchas shasa nisim, and we saw that in Adloka also the Adloka generates a bracha of shasa nisim, not on the Adloka dimension of the mitzvah, but on the Re'iyah dimension of the mitzvah. Oh, he says Dilma birchas shasa nisim, and he's going to throw in Shachiyonu to boot, ena birchas hamitzvah, but rather it's generated by the Zman of Purim. Now again, if we had time to go back to Ner Chanukah, I think we found, if anybody has the time, maybe if you wouldn't mind doing this here, if you have the time, just look for a paragraph here. I just don't have the time to look for it. It's either on this page or that, where he says that even if you don't see a Ner Chanukah, you should be Mevarech Shasa Nisim. And I think he talks about a blind person. Which means that the Shasa Nisim is generated by the Zman of Chanukah.
Why don't you do it nighttime and day then?
Oh, in Chanukah or in Purim?
In Purim.
Okay, so that's going to be our major discussion. Is there a bracha at night as well as during the day? We never found a distinction in Shasa Nisim. But nevertheless, it could be that already in Chanukah we had a precedent of a bracha of Sha'asah Nisim that is generated by the Zman itself. Meaning it's not necessarily connected to the Adlakas Ner Chanukah or even the Re'iyas Ner Chanukah. Do you remember we discussed the Me'iri about whether or not you should recite Hallel on Purim if you don't have a Megillah? Mm-hmm. And the Me'iri was advocating in favor of reciting Hallel. That it means that what generates Hallel is the Zman of Purim itself. In the case of Chanukah, could be that Chanukah as a Zman would generate Sha'asah Nisim.
You found it?
Yeah, I knew you'd find it immediately.
I think this is great.
He says, Al etzi yemeah Chanukah. Does he talk about the Re'iyah as well?
See,
here we were saying that the Zman itself is Machayev this bracha. They only establish it on the Hadlaka or on the Re'iyah. But the bracha itself is meaningful even without Hadlaka. So let's say I'm on the moon and I'm not able to light an Er Chanukah. I would still make the bracha of Sha'asah Nisim, and I can't see anyone. There are no moon men there that have lit a Ner Chanukah. I would still make the bracha of Sha'asah Nisim. It's an independent bracha that's generated by this man. And I think that's what he's trying to argue here in the case of Megillah of Purim. He says the following: Ela hazman shel Purim she'esrachesh behu nisa mechayev bircha Sha'asah Nisim v'shachiyonu. You could almost substitute hadlaka for kriya, and it comes out to the same logical structure. And he says the following: Nafkemia b'misha ein lo megillah. Like this is the famous Me'iri about Hallel, but he's applying it to Sha'asah Nisim. And he says the following: Ha'im yivarech shechiyanu u'bircha Sha'asah Nisim. Because if it's generated, if these brachas are generated by Kriyas HaMegillah, he has no Megillah. But if they're generated by the Zman itself, then he will recite these brachos even without a Megillah.
Then you should probably recite them with one of the other mitzvos.
That's a good idea. Maybe after Suda he should recite it, or maybe at the time he's giving Matanos Avyonim or Mishloach Manos. So this discussion about Birchas HaMegillah is a pretty long discussion. I think I gave you pages Shin Yutes and Shin Chaf, am I right? And he's going to go through a whole development here based on two sources. One is the Shiltos and the other is the Tosfos in two places, once here in Megillah and the other in Masechtas Sukkah. So that's very interesting. So let's now go back to where we started before, and the sugya on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. Now this piece, which is called Simon Lamed Hey, is focused on a Gemara in Masechta Eruvin, a brisa quoted in Masechta Eruvin, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis. This brisa is called Seder HaMishnah. What does it mean, Seder HaMishnah? Exactly how was the Torah transmitted? What was the Seder? So the brisa says the Seder was the following: Moshe Laman Mipi Agvura. So the first transmission of the Torah was Mipi Agvura to Moshe Rabbeinu. Then Nichnas Aaron. Vishanalo Moshe Pirko. So Moshe now at stage 2 is transmitting the Torah to Aaron. Nistalik Aaron v'yoshav l'smol Moshe Rabbeinu. So Aaron takes a seat on the left side, and then the Bnei Aaron come in, Elazar and Itamar, and they sit to Moshe's right. So this is really impressive. You got Moshe and you got Aaron on the left, and you have Itamar and Elazar on the right. Then after that, the Zekanim come in, and then Moshe gives the Torah to all of Klal Yisrael. So the Shagasari says that this Gemara in Erevin, if you read it carefully, contradicts our Sugya Masechta Megillah. Because the Sugya Masechta Megillah says that Torah has to be received be'amida, and the Talmidim have to stand. And that began with Moshe Rabbeinu when he was commanded to stand when he received the Torah from Hashem. And it continued historically up till the death of Rav Gamliel. At that point, Yorad Choli Liolam, and as a result, they studied Torah B'Yeshiva. But now let's go back to the Gemara in Erevin in the Seder Mishnah. It says explicitly that Aaron sat down to Moshe's left, and later on in the Brisa in Erevin it says that Elazar and Itamar, after they got the Torah, they took a seat on the right, and then the Zekanim sat down, and so forth and so on. Says the Turi Evin, it seems from the Gemara and Erevin quite clearly that even back at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Talmidim sat and they studied the Torah. Now please keep in mind one point here. It doesn't say in the Brisa and Erevin that Moshe was sitting when he received the Torah. It doesn't say in the Brisa and Erevin that Aaron was sitting when he received the Torah. It doesn't say that Elazar and Itamar were sitting when they received the Torah. It only says that after the first round, when they would hear the Torah for a second round, and we'll soon see that the Gemara derives from this that a Rebbe should teach the Talmidim four times over, that at that point, in the second round, they sat down. But the Shagas Aryeh doesn't make that distinction. Now the Shagas Aryeh is stuck with a problem, and the Sfas Emes, who's way later than the Shagas Aryeh, he comes forward to try to answer this question. And he wants to suggest a fundamental distinction between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. When the Pasuk says, Vata Amod Imadi, that was referring to Torah Shebichsav. And Torah Shebichsav has to be received by Amida. But with regard to Torah Shebal Peh, we're going to try to see if we can support the Sfas Emes, there's no requirement of Amida. And therefore, when it says that in the Seder HaMishnah they were sitting, that means they were sitting for the Torah Shebal Peh. Now Rashi in Masechta Erevin, on the opening line in the Brisa, the only opening words in the Brisa, Ketzad Seder HaMishnah, Rashi said, Ketzad Lamdu Yisrael Torah Shebal Peh. And the Sfas Emes is very much medayik from Rashi that the entire Seder HaMishnah is talking about Torah Shebal Peh. Now that's a pella, because when you think about it, everything that was received both as Torah Shebichsav and its interpretation of Torah Shebal Peh. And in fact, that's what the Rambam writes in his Hakdama to Seder Zeroyim, where he goes through the entire Seder Mishnah, and he says, "Da ki kol mitzvah shenasan Hakadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Shalom nasna lo bipirusha." In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu received from Hashem the Torah itself and the pirusha, the mitzvah and its pirush. Haya omer lo hamitzvah, Hashem would give Moshe Rabbeinu the mitzvah. Ve'achkach omer lo pirusha ve'inyana. Ve'inyan limud liYisrael nichnas elav tchila Aaron u'Moshe haya omer lo mitzvah nesuna b'pamachas ve'limdua pirusha. Nichnasu achrav lozav itomer bonav v'haya Moshe omer lehem masha omer liAaron v'yistalku. And it would seem from the Rambam that what was being given here in the Seder HaMishnah was both Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. In other words, when the Rambam says mitzvah and then he says pirusha, mitzvah is the official words of the Torah Shebichsav, and then pirusha is the Torah Shebal Peh. Now, if we take this Rambam and plug it back into the Mishnah, into the Brisa in Erevin, then what was going on here in each one of these four sequences was the transmission of both Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. And if that be the case, then since Torah Shebichsav is included, we're back to the question of the Shakas Aryeh. Why were they sitting? Unless, again, you would insist that maybe they received Torah Shebichsav Ba'amida on the first round. Now, on the second round, they would receive the Torah Shebaalpeh, and according to Sfas Emes, Torah Shebaalpeh does not have the same requirement of Amida, that you could actually receive Torah Shebaalpeh b'yeshiva. Hine. The Gemara says that Nimtza, that if you go through the Seder HaMishnah, the Gemara says, as recorded in the Braisa, Hakol Arba, there were four rounds of hearing the Torah. Now again, it's a little bit complicated here because, although it's true, Moshe Rabbeinu passed on the Torah to Aaron. Aaron heard it once. Then he sat down and he listened in as it was given to his children. That's twice. In the third round, Aaron was there and he heard it as it was given to the Zekedim, and until finally to all of Klali. So Aaron heard it four times. Amar Rabbi Lazar, we learn a halacha from this. Chayav Adam Lashanos the Talmido Arba Pa'amin. He has to repeat the lesson four times. I was told, I mean, don't quote me on this, that there's a yeshiva in the old city where they repeat it four times and they expect the Talmidim to have memorized it. Now, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to memorize a text after four times, but I'm just telling you. So Rav Yaakov Emden has a comment on this Gemara in Erevin. And he writes the following. Hodechayev Adam Lashanos the Talmidim Abba Pa'amim Hainu Dafka B'yemehem Shayulomdim Balpeh. Right, they didn't have written texts the way we have it today. So we don't have to memorize our Torah because we have it in writing. So why was there a requirement then, in those days, to review the lesson four times? That would achieve memorization. They didn't have a written text. We already have a written text. The Yeshlom or Od, Dachiyu, L'lamed l'talmido dalet pa'amim rak nemar al Torah Shebaalpeh l'chud v'lo al Torah Shebichsav, that the entire derivation of reviewing it four times is only Torah Shebichsav, excuse me, Torah Shebaalpeh, because again Torah Shebichsav even at that time was written in the text. So right, this is before Rebbe came with his whole etzah to write Torah Shebaalpeh b'ksav. So until Rebbe came, what they had was Torah Shebichsav b'ksav and Torah Shebaalpeh b'alpeh. So therefore, this review, according to Rav Yaakov Emden, is only necessary for Torah Shebaalpeh. For us, it's not necessary at all because everything is Torah Shebichsav. We write even Torah Shebaalpeh into ksav. So the memorization process is necessary only vis-a-vis Torah Shebaalpeh. Now, let's go back to the Rambam. The Rambam, when he goes through the Seder HaMishnah, as we saw earlier, in his Pirush HaMishnayos, he says that what was given over was both Torah Shebaalpeh and Torah Shebichsav. But what the Rav Yaakov Emden is saying is that okay, that's okay, but then the Torah Shebichsav on the second round, or third and fourth, was only part of the learning of Torah Shebaalpeh. So from the first time and on, meaning starting with the second time, the purpose of Torah Shebichsav was only, what word should I use, an introduction or a preface to Torah Shebaalpeh. The point of review, let's say for example Aaron had to hear the Torah a second time around, that's only for Torah Shebaalpeh, because Torah Shebaalpeh has to be memorized. And in order to memorize it, he's going to have to hear it four times. But as far as Torah Shebichsav is concerned, even the Rambam would agree that it was not an integral or essential part of the Masoras HaTorah from the second time and on. It was only an introduction, as we said before. So therefore he says, the Chiyuv L'Shanos L'Talmid Adal Pa'amim Nemar Rak Al Torah Shebaalpeh L'Chud Because again, the Dalet Pa'amim, according to the Yavetz, represents memorization. There's no need for memorization with regard to Torah Shebichsav. There's a text. There's no need to memorize the text. Just look at the text. But with regard to Torah Shebaal Peh, there's no text. And at that time, there was no text. It's called Echad V'Echad Shalomdo Dalet Pa'amim. Lo lamdo dalet pam b'shvil ha-Torah shebichsav, even though again the Rambam insists that the Torah shebichsav was repeated, ki im b'shvil ha-Torah shebaal peh. Now it could be that what the Rambam means is that for the sake of the second group, let's say for example Elazar and Itamar come in, they have never heard the Torah shebichsav, so that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating the Torah shebichsav. But as far as Aaron is concerned, what he has to listen to is Torah shebaal peh. Because he has to check off, you know, four times until finally he knows it bal peh. Ulefi zeh asi shapir de betchila bepam rishona kishemosha yeshona li Aaron pirko hoya Aaron omed. Now, why was Aaron standing? Right, it only says in the Brisa that he sat down after he received the Torah. He was standing only for Torah shebichsav. In other words, he already fulfilled his requirement of Ma'umad. Moshe would still have to teach Aaron three additional times. There was no need to review Torah Shebichsav because we have it in writing. Is therefore there was no need to stand at the time of the second, third, and fourth rounds. Aaron had a seat, and he kept his seat. He had assigned seating, and that's where he sat for the next three rounds, because those were only Liman Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's the only reason he needed a review. And if we accept the Sfas Emes, then Torah Shebaal Peh does not require Amida. The entire derivation of Amida in Torah only applies to Torah Shebichsav. Ata po amodi madi means HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm now going to give you the Torah Shebichsav, stand. When it comes to Torah Shebaal Peh, that's going to be B'Yeshiva.
Just to make sure I understand, so we're saying that the teretz is that he taught two different things at the same time. He taught Torah Shebichsav to Elazar Isamar, who was standing, and he taught Torah Shebaal Peh to Aaron at the same time, but
right,
all coming out of his mouth at the same moment, or he just directed his attention to different people.
Well, no. I mean, I don't think. He repeated himself.
No. But the question was based on the premise that I'm teaching Elazar Isamar. They're standing here. I'm teaching them. Well, Aaron sits. How does he have the right to sit? Well, because he's learning Torah Shebaal Peh. He's not. He's teaching Torah Shebichsav. That's why they're standing.
Right, but he's not. He's not in a state of limud. You know, there's a limud, and that applies in Aaron's case to Torah Shebaal Peh. It could be that, you know, that Aaron, maybe he would stand out's covered or something like that, but this requirement of limud, and when you learn Torah Shebichsav you have to stand, that didn't apply to Aaron. He already fulfilled that mitzvah on the first round.
Well, that's already an answer I can accept, but to say he's learning Torah Shebaal Peh, who's teaching to him?
Moshe is teaching Torah Shebaal Peh second time around, and for that he doesn't have to stand.
So
in fact, even at that point, according to this presentation, even Elazar and Itamar took their seats. Right. Although in the Brice it only says they took their seats after they received the Torah. But it would mean the following, that Aaron is really there just to, he's eavesdropping on the Torah Shebichsav. He doesn't need a Chazor and Torah Shebichsav. Nobody needs a Chazor and Torah Shebichsav. He's really there eavesdropping. He's sort of like on the sidelines until he gets to Torah Shebaal Peh. Now he has to perk up his ears because he's chayav in a chazor of Torah Shebaal Peh. They didn't have svarim in those days. And at that point, there's no need for him to stand up. You're right that Elazar and Itamar are hearing the Torah Shebichsav for the first time. They certainly have to stand up because for them it's a real limud of Torah Shebichsav.
They didn't write down the Torah Shebichsav either until the end of 40 years. They don't have a scroll. What are you saying? It's written down. They don't have.
Okay,
to
well, let's say it will be written down. So you don't have to memorize something that's going to be written
down.
But now he says, let's try to understand the Sfas Emes on a fundamental level. Where is there a basis for differentiating between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? Why would it be that Torah Shebaal Peh is mutar b'yeshiva, whereas Torah Shebichsav requires Amida? We try to say that that's the way we derive it from the Pasuk. But he says, you know, the you can't derive from the pasuk because you don't know how to interpret the pasuk. Moshe Rabbeinu was receiving both Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. When Hashem told him to stand, you know, we have every reason to assume, unless we know otherwise, that it's for the entire kit and caboodle, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to stand not only because of Torah Shebichtav, but also Torah Shebaalpeh. Now, he quotes another Gemara, also in Erev, and the Gemara asks the following stira. There are two psukim regarding Moshe Rabbeinu that contradict each other. One pasuk says, Va'eshev Bahar. Moshe Rabbeinu says in Sefer Devarim, he says, I sat on the mountain. Another pasuk says, V'yanochi amadati Bahar. I stood on the mountain. So the Gemara reconciles the following. Okay, wait a minute. Before we get to Rava, let's just make the following point. If the Sfasemis is right, that the requirement of Amida only applies to Torah Shebichtav, then what's the Gemara bothered by? Why not say the following? That's the Chiddush of the Gevuras Yitzchak. Anochi Amadati Bahar is referring to what? Torah Shebichtav. There's a mistake in the... on the side. Do you have my writing on the side? I think there was just simply a mistake in the text. So, Lefianis, you'll tell me if you agree with me. I think there's a printing error here. He says the following: Anochi amadati bahar should refer to Torah Shebichtav, and Va'eshev bahar should refer to Torah Shebaalpeh. The Gemara doesn't give that answer. From the absence of that answer, it would seem that there's no distinction here between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. In both cases, the Gemara thinks it should either be Amida or be Yeshiva. And assuming there's a definite requirement of Amida in Torah Shebichtav, then why is Moshe Rabbeinu saying Va'eshev Bahar? So that's a real kasha on the Sfasemis. Now, Rava tries to reconcile this apparent contradiction, and Rava says the following: Rachos me'umad v'kashos miyushav. That which was easy to comprehend, Moshe stood for. That which was more challenging, that he would sit for. Okay. Now just 1 second, what is Dvarav referring to? Is that referring to the Turiyev? Dvarav, so Turiyev is bothered by the following question. We learned in the Braisa of Seder HaMishnah that the entire Torah, the whole corpus of Torah, was being transmitted. Presumably that includes both Rachos and Kashos. So, Fek the Turiyevan, how do we reconcile Rava with the Braisa? Rava is saying that whether he stood or he sat, Moshe Rabbeinu, would depend upon the nature of the content. But the Braisa says that the entire enterprise of Mesiras HaTorah required, or shall we say, did not require Amida, because again, the Braisa seems to say that Aaron was sitting. What are you going to tell me? According to Rava, Aaron was sitting for the kashos, but he stood for the... I'm sorry. He was sitting for the kashos, but he stood for the rakos? That's not the... Says the Shagasari, that's not the pshat in the Braisa. The Braisa is saying that there was an entire transmission of one entity of Torah, and Aaron took his seat. Presumably, even for Rakos. So the Gevuras Yitzchak wants to take a stab at this because he's very eager to try to defend and justify the Sfasemes. Again, let's go over it one more time. The Sfasemes says that the requirement of Amida only applies to what? To Torah Shebichtav. And Aaron, already on the second round, since he had already fulfilled his mitzvah of Talmud Torah and received the transmission of Torah Shebichtav, he was only interested in what? Torah Shebaalpeh, therefore he sat. But what are we going to do now with Rava? Rava makes a distinction between Rachos and Kashos. And according to Rava, when it comes to Rachos, we require Ma'uman. When it comes to Kashos, we require Miyusha. We're okay with Miyusha. So at this point, he quotes the famous Tanchuma. Why do I say this Tanchuma? Because if anybody asks me, tell me, you know, like, I don't have any Sfarim, and he says to me, tell me over something in the name of the Tanchuma, this is what I'm going to tell him. This is the famous Tanchuma. For some reason, it's in Parshas Noach. And the Tanchuma has a new take on Kaf Aleihem Har Kegiges. And the Tanchuma wants to say the following. Why were the Jews hesitant to accept the Torah? After all, Chazal say that Hashem, you know, went to each Ummah. Each Ummah rejected it. What's in the Torah? It's not for me. And then Klal Yisrael accepted the Torah. So we have Nasa v'Nishma. What compels Chazal to introduce the compulsion of Kaf Aleihem Har Kegiges? So this is the very famous Tanchuma that makes a distinction between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. The Tanchuma says the following: Lo karas HaKadosh Baruch Hu brisim Klal Yisrael el al HaTorah Shebal Peh. So if I wanted to give grades to Torah Shebichsav on the one hand, Torah Shebal on the other, which of the two Torahs would get a higher grade? Torah Shebal Peh. In other words, Torah Shebichsav doesn't really shine a candle to Torah Shebal Peh. The bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Klal Yisrael is on Torah Shebal Peh. So for those who enjoy Torah Shebal Peh, this is good news. But there's also bad news. Because Klal Yisrael didn't want to accept Torah Shebal Peh according to the Tanchum. He says the following. How do you describe Torah Shebal Peh? This is a Medrash Tanchuma. He kasha lilmod. Don't think for a minute it's easy to learn Torah Shebal Peh. V'yesh batzar gadol. It's a painful experience to learn Torah Shebal Peh. He meshula lechoshech. It's like trying to work through walk into a room and figure out how to. You know, go through the labyrinth of the room when it's pitch black. Then he says, "V'lo kiblu Yisrael es haTorah, ache kafa leim haKadosh Baruch Hu har kegiges." Who's interested in taking the Torah that is kasha lilmod, bitzar gadol, mishula kechoshech? I don't want that. The imtomer, and if you'll argue, al Torah shebichsav kafa leim har kegiges. Hello, Mishosh Amar Lehem L'Mekabel Matemis HaTorah. The Medrash says that he went around to the nations, and they said, Anu Kulam Yomar Nasa V'Nishma. That's not Kaf Aleihem Har Kegiges. They already accepted the Torah before it was given. But the answer is they had no problem accepting the Torah. They thought that the Torah was the Torah Shebichsav. Ein Bo Yegia, Vitzar, Hima'at. You know, that's something that you can master. Ella Omerlem ala Torah Shebal Peh, Sheyesh ba Dikduke Mitzvahs. You have to go and analyze meticulously every nuance. Kalos Chamuros, V'aza Kamoves, V'kosha Kishol Kinasa. That's the Tanchum. Again, there's a lot more in Tanchum. He only quotes part of it.
Where in Noach is that?
I think it's the last Tanchum in Noach, if I remember correctly. Take a look. What you could do is, if you do, can you do a word search?
Not me, I can't.
Oh, yeah, that you don't have. So you can only get the Tanchum up. All right.
It's the Resh Parsha, Noach.
Oh, it's at the beginning? I thought it was at the end. Okay. Harei Mavur, what do we see from this Tanchum? That there's a chiluk between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebichsav, Ein Bo Yegia, V'Tzar, Kal Knosa, Torah Shebal Peh, Koshal Ulmamda, and there's Yegia, and there's Tzar. Lefize Nire, it's an unbelievable chiddush here, that this is what Rava had in mind. Do you remember when Rava said that you need standing, you need Amida for Rakos, and you can do away with yeshivas fine for Koshos. Nira, what does the word Koshos mean? To Hodiyama Rava, Rakos b'mu'ud, Koshos b'mu'ud, b'emes bo'la chalik v'torah shebichsav l'torah shebal peh. That now that we saw in the Tanchuma that the study of Torah shebichsav is called Kal, right? He says that's relatively easy. And the reason for that is because Ein Bo Yegia V'Tzar. He says that's what Rava has in mind when he talks about Rachos. Mm-hmm. Just one second. The yisod achiluk eino mi achiluk dinim. In other words, Rava is not making a. So why didn't Rava just say kan v'torish v'ksav tan v'torish bal peh? He says the following. The reason why there's this fundamental distinction between Torah Shmaksav and Torah Shmal Peh as far as Amida is concerned is not because of some sort of a halachic entity of Torah Shmaksav, another entity called Torah Shmal Peh. It's not a Chal Shem in Torah Shmaksav versus Torah Shmal Peh, but rather Ki'im de Torah Shmaksav Ayrachos. It's only because Torah Shmaksav is something that you can understand. And therefore, you should be standing. If you could understand it, then why not stand? What, are you going to tell me you're going to get weak? You don't need all your 6 cylinders. How many cylinders are 8? I forget. 8 cylinders. You don't need all 8 cylinders to learn Torah Shmiksah. But Torah Shmiksah Vikoshos, that's very difficult. And therefore, Mutul Alamda B'Yeshiva. So again, it's true that there's a distinction here between Torah Shmaksav and Torah Shmal Peh, but not because of some sort of Xeris HaKosav, the two entities here. One entity is called Torah Shmaksav and the other is Torah Shmal Peh. No, that's not what we're talking about. There may be halachic differences as far as reading things Bal Peh and so forth and so between Torah Shmaksav and Torah Shmal Peh. That's not what we're talking about. Otherwise, Rava would have known how to make that distinction. He wouldn't have to complicate matters by differentiating between Rachos and Koshos. But Rava wants to understand, why is it that in Torah Shmiksav, there's a requirement of Amidah, and in Torah Shmal Peh, there's no requirement of Amidah. Again, what we're doing is we're superimposing the Sfasemis into the mindset of Rava. We don't know that Rava knew the Sfasemis. Sfasemis was a good deal later than Rava, right? But assuming he accepted this distinction of the Sfasemis, Rava wants to tell you why. Why are you telling me? Where does it say in the Pasuk? Right, we derive it from Moshe Rabbeinu. He received the Torah from Hashem, and he was standing. Mikan, that you have to stand for Torah. How do you know to distinguish between Torah Shmiksav and Torah Shmal Peh? Says Rava, no. It's not a distinction between Torah Shmiksav and Torah Shmal Peh, b'mahusam, but it has to do with the nature of standing and the nature of sitting. That in the case of Torah Shmiksav, because it's relatively easy to study Torah Shmiksav, therefore, you can do so by Amidah. And in truth, maybe the Torah would have required Amidah for Torah Shmal Peh as well. But Torah Shmal Peh is koshos. It's very difficult. You need tzar, you need yegiyah, you have to put all your energy into it, you have to understand on the deepest level. Oh, with these zen nirah, the zeu bir tirutz haturyevin, shasugi be'erivin ayri be'koshos. That maybe we could assume that when the sugi and erivin, the Mishnah, the Seder Mishnah says that Aaron was sinning, we're talking about koshos. In other words, he had to learn now that part of Torah that requires a tremendous amount of energy and mental focus. And for that, you have to sit down. The Afsha Seder Mishnah Yal Kol HaTorah Shalom Piyagvur. We saw from the Rambam that everything was being given over. Sfir Leila Turi Evan, Kemoshin is Bayer, Das Seder Mishnah Yarak Bishvil Torah Shmal Peh. Notice the limud itself was for the sake of Torah Shmal Peh, because Torah Shmiksav they already learned on the first round, and you don't have to memorize Torah Shmiksav because it's written, or as Dr. Joel says, it will be written. Okay, I will be Torah Shmiksav lo nege. I'm sorry, lo naga hach seder. Notice whatever is described as the seder, and it's when they stood, when they sit, that has nothing to do with Torah Shmiksav, because Torah Shmiksav on the first round, when it's a mitzvah of limud, requires amida. And there's no discussion here in Erev about yeshiva. Yeshiva was not a hava amida in the case of Torah Shmiksav, or on the first round when you're receiving it. But now, the whole seder of sitting down and so forth is Torah Shmal Peh. That's called kashos. And that's where Rava says that Moshe Rabbeinu on the har was sitting for kashos, and now we're identifying kashos as what? Based on the Tanhuma as Torah Shmal Peh is called kashos. Kol zeh rak l'Rava, we're not out of the clear here, because Rava is the one who gives that answer, but many disagree with Rava in the Gemara. The Gemara gives other answers, and they don't make a distinction between Torah Shmiksav and Torah Shmal Peh, and therefore we come back to our original question, and that is, the Seder HaMishnah seems to indicate that even at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was Limud Torah the yeshiva. Did you ever think to yourself, why do we call a yeshiva yeshiva? The answer is right here. because a yeshiva is not for rachos. Rachos is good when you teach a class in Tanakh, but if you want to teach a class in Torah Shebal Peh, you see, our Tanakh today is already Torah Shebal Peh, if you follow what I mean. Because the way we study Tanakh today, I don't know how many of you gentlemen, by show of hands, go for 1 week to Gush Etzion to study Tanakh. Only two people? Three people? You've been there? That's not Torah Shebichsav. That's Torah Shebal Peh. Some of it is secular knowledge too, because they integrate secular knowledge into the understanding of Tanakh. But whatever they're doing, it's certainly not Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav would be, if I turn the clock back 100 years ago, would be what we call Tzena Re'ena. You know what I mean? You know, it would be a translation of the Torah to another language. So, in the vernacular, because you don't understand the words of Ashuris, so you need a translation of the Torah. That's Torah Shebichsav. You know, when we delve into questions and issues and we find steers and we try, that's already Torah Shebal Peh. So therefore, a yeshiva is called a yeshiva because the yeshiva is dedicated to the study of Torah Shebal Peh. That's called kashos. Now, I would be afraid to teach this to my students because they'll get scared, you know, after the Tanhuma's description of what it means to study Torah Shebal Peh. Like, who wants to, you know, for that you need kafaleh ma'akigigim. So a yeshiva has to actually have two things. Number one, it requires yeshiva. Number two, it requires a harkigigis. And I'm wondering if this presentation has something to do with Purim. Because the Gemara says about Purim that Hadar Kivlua Bimei HaShverosh. And that was a Kabbalah Beratzon without Kafalem HaKigigas. That maybe, and we have to see why, as far as the acceptance of Torah Shebal Peh is concerned, here's where Purim has some connection to accepting Torah Shebal Peh. Why? I don't know. For that we have to learn the Pachad Yitzchak. Did you get the photocopies of the Pachad Yitzchak?
Yeah.
Let me show you something in the. You see, I'm trying to juggle the time that we have. I find in the past that I don't give enough time to Pachad Yitzchak, but there may be some people in the audience who don't want to hear the Pachad Yitzchak. What? Rabbi, you're not interested in Pachad Yitzchak. That's not your thing. Alright, can you tolerate it though?
Of course.
Okay.
What happened with Rabbi Gamliel that it switched? It
was all. Yeah, the Gemara says Yarda. Yardan, what does it say there? Weakness. What is it called? Chalishus? What's the Chulsha? Or Choli. Yardan Choli. The Rambam, by the way, doesn't mention Rambam Gamliel. The Rambam mentions Churban Abayis. That after the Churban Abayis, they were weak. I suspect it doesn't have to do with physical qualities. That it has something to do with, you know, the mental capacity just changed.
Which stuff?
So you take a look on page Nun Dalid for a second, which is called Inyan Yud Aleph. He says that there is a Chaf HaDimyon in Purim and Kippurim. Now, in the past, what the Pachad Yitzchak has tried to do is he tried to accomplish the explaining the common denominator, the equation between Purim and Kippurim. So you may recall that he had a whole presentation here about two ways of serving Hashem. There's one which is Kulal Hashem and the other is Kulal Hashem. And therefore, based on the Gra, he said that we need to have these 2 days. One is Yom HaKippurim, which is Kulal Hashem, and one is Yom HaPurim, which is Kulal Hashem, and how they integrate to the... Here, he wants to say that the Chof HaDimyon means that they're not the same. And although we've managed to find many similarities between Purim and Yom and Kippurim, you remember we spoke about this Sarel Azazel and Nagrola and the Pur of Purim. But nevertheless, we have to emphasize that they're two separate entities. So this Maimar is to focus on the contrast between Purim and Yom Kippurim. He says that the common denominator between the two is called a Kabbalah. Because Yom HaKippurim is a day of tshuva, and tshuva requires a kabbalah al ha'asid. We have to commit ourselves to do better next year and not repeat the same sins. Purim is also a day of kabbalah, and it's a day of kabbalah satorah. He says, "Biyom Kippur medubar al kabol lahava, bepurim medubar al kimu vekiblu." And Chazal say on the pasuk kimu vekiblu, which is in the ninth parak of Esther, that Purim is a yom of kabbalah satorah. So the Pakad Yitzchak says that although both of these days are days of Kabbalah, which we accept as upon ourselves a commitment, there's a fundamental difference between the two. Yom HaKippurim is a Kabbalah with Charata. The entire Kabbalah, the resolution for the future, is predicated on the regret for the past. Purim, we're talking about a Kabbalah of Torah, which has no relationship whatsoever to do with Charata. What does it mean? That in the past, when the Torah was given, it was given Kaf Aleim Har Kigigis. And if we were compelled to accept the Torah, then Mikan Moda, this is the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches, is Mikan Moda Rabbalo Raisa. So if you force me, compel me to sell my field, I am Moser Moda, and I tell to Adim that I really have no interest whatsoever in selling my field. I'm just doing it out of compulsion. But in the case of Purim, it's called Bitul Moda. Purim is the day of Bitul Moda. Purim is the day that we say, you know what? We accept the Torah, not because of some external compulsion, because there's a mountain hovering over our head, but rather because I want the Torah. The Torah represents me. My ani, my self-identity is completely bound with the Torah. In the case of Yom HaKippurim, we're saying just the opposite. The Kabbalah al-Asid is a statement in which we make that anything that we did in the past, all the sins of our past year, were a result of garmim chitzoniyim, of external pressures. But if you want to know where the ani is, where the I am, it's just the opposite. It's the future. It's the way I want to conduct myself from now and on. And therefore I have charat al-avar, and I relate or I attribute all my past sins and actions to garmim chitzonim, but now I'm taking upon myself a new identity, a new ani, and I'm cutting myself off from the past. Purim is just the opposite. In Purim, what I'm saying is that the Naseh V'Nishma is an acceptance of the Torah with absolute clarity, with absolute commitment, and it is real, it's genuine, it's me, this is me. And therefore the concept of regret is totally out of line over here. It's totally antithetical to what Purim is all about. So the Kabbalah of Purim is achraza, he calls it a declaration, that it's me that accepts the Torah, that's my ratzon, I don't need kaf aleim har kigigis, and the me of Purim is really the me of Har Sinai. When I said at Har Sinai, Naseh V'Nishma, it wasn't because of the Har Kigigis. It was because, at least on this day of Purim, I could say it's because I really am the Torah. I and the Torah are one and the same. In Tshuva, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, very famous, my Rebbe used to make a big deal about this Rambam, that Yishana Shmo, a Baal Tshuva should change his name. Klomar, says the Rambam, Ani Acher, the Eineni Oso Aish. I mean, don't identify me as the person who committed those sins. So the Charat of Yom HaKippurim is really a Mesiras Moda. What I'm telling the Ribbono Shel Olam is that any Averis that I implemented were a result of external compulsion. It wasn't me. The true me is a different person. I changed my name because I want to indicate that the old me that was compelled to do mitzvahs and didn't really want to do the mitzvahs, that old me is gone and it's been replaced by a new identity. But in Purim, what we're saying is bitul moda. We're not trying to give a moda and say don't relate to what we did in the past, but on the contrary, what we did in the past is really truly us, it's genuine. And now we're accepting the Torah not because of garmim chitzonim, el mimamake ha-nefesh v'avayoso, because of my very essence. And there we begin to see in this context that the matbea, the essence of avodah on Purim, is not charata, but on the contrary, it's removing charata, it's removing the modah. And therefore, the tzumo shel yom haPurim is the essence of a person and his relationship to Torah. I accept Torah not because of any external compulsion, but because mitoch hanefesh, mitoch mamake havayasi. And therefore, tochen shel bitul modah soser es a tochen shel mesiras modah. In other words, now on Purim we're undergoing a process of bitul modah. Whatever modah we were presenting in the past because of the compulsion to accept the Torah, that's gone. We want the Torah. On the contrary, on Yom HaKippurim, it's all about mesiras modah. This was not us. This doesn't represent our true soul. So let's go on in the Gevuras Yitzchak. V'hinei Rambam b'perek Dalet Milchus Talmud Torah Kosev Ketzad Melamdim Harav Yoshev Barosh. The Talmidim will stand around the Rav, and Barishona Harav Yoshev Talmidim Omdim Mikodem Churban Abay Sheni Nagu Akol Lilmod Lelamed LeTalmidim V'heim Yoshvim. I'm sorry, Mikodem. I made a mistake. Mikodem means at the time of the death of Rabbi Gamliel, before the Churban Abayis, at that point already, what I meant to say was at the time of the death of Rabbi Gamliel, which was before the Churban Abayis, at that time already, the Talmidim could not, they didn't have the stamina to stand, and the Yoshvin. They accepted Torah sitting, and that's what we have today, that the Talmidim will sit. So he tells you that some anonymous Mefarshim commentaries on the Rambam ask the following question. Rabbi Avo derives the din, this is on in Megillah Chafal from Anal, of Amido B'Shas Limud from the Pasuk Vata Po Amodi Madi. Mashmash, it's Ochia Rav HaTalmid Shovim B'Shah Shalomdim. In other words, the Rambam has the Rebbe sitting. This is before the Churban Abayis, right? The Rebbe is sitting, the Talmidim are standing.
How are they Shavim?
Then they're not Shavim. How could the Rambam reconcile with Rabbi Avo? Rabbi Avo says that the situation originally was Atah Amod Poimadi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kaviyoch Moser HaTorah, he's the Rebbe, yeah. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the Talmud, but the word Imadi indicates that they were both standing. Again, what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing? Don't ask me that question. Mashmash Shitzok Shia Gama Rav Gama Talmud standing, they both should be Shavim. And he quotes here the Parshas Drachim. I think we've seen this Parshas Drachim in the past in a different context. And he writes that the source of the Rambam is the Gemara of Seder HaMishnah and Erevin. Because it says there that Moshe Lamad Mipi HaGvura Nichnas Aaron V'Shonalo Moshe Pirkov V'Nistalik Aaron V'Yosha Mismolo Shel Moshe Hashta I Amrit Bishleima D'Bitchila Gamkein Hayulomdim Me'umad Yishoya Rav Yoshev. So the Talmidim would stand and the Rav was sitting, is Nicha. Then I can understand Devadei Moshe Hayoshev, the Aaron, when Aaron was called in to receive the Torah, Kishishonalo Moshe Pirko Hayama Umad, he would have to stand. Liachishonalo Moshe Pirko Nistalik Vyoshev Lol Small Moshe Mishum Dikvar Loman Halacha Meumad. Viachkach Yoshev Ubonav Gamkein Mitchila. Oh, this is your question, Yechiel. He's learning, this is the Parshas Drachim, the Mishnah Mill. He's learning that when the Bnei Aaron came in for their turn, they would also have to stand. And it's only when on the third round Moshe Rabbeinu transmitted the Torah to these Kenim, then at that point they would sit down. Interesting, he used the word halacha, which indicates that he's talking about Torah Shebal Peh, not like the Sfasemes, but okay, that's on the side. The Akachazu v'yoshlehem, then they took their seats, Liyamin Shal Moshe, and Aaron was on the small. Eliyam Richa Mitchila Af Harav Hayalomid Litalmidim Me'umad. If you're going to go with the question that we asked, that it seems from Rabbi Avo that the Rav himself is required to teach Torah when he's in a standing position, no less than the Talmidim, then if you make that premise, what are you going to do with the Braisa in Erevin? Nimtza de Moshe Hayim Ma'umad. You're telling me that Moshe himself, when he transmitted the Torah, he was standing. The Echi Tachin de Moshe Hayim Ma'umad. The Aaron Ubanov, Achshik Far Lomdu Allah, you Yoshmim. Just 1 second. Not sure the calculation has to be so. Just 1 minute. What's the Mishnah Melech's kasha is that if there's halacha that the Rebbe has to stand when he teaches Torah, so Bishlam and Gabi the Talmidim, we could say that they could sit once they receive the Torah, but we're not going to say with regard to Moshe that because he already transmitted the Torah, that he would be allowed to sit in the second round of transmission of the Torah. So again, with regard to Talmidim, once it's the second round, they could sit. But with regard to Moshe, as the Melamed, he would have to remain standing. Is that what he says? Why is that so? I don't know. I just don't get the mathematics here. Iyamit bishleim and tchila farav yalom el talmidim. Fine. But if you're going to tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu would have to teach Torah in a standing position, and yet the Talmidim already on the second round are sitting, so then it comes out that Moshe Rabbeinu is standing and the Talmidim are sitting. One of Gam came to Chilu Lomdu Alach V'Fosh Me'umach Kachoz V'Yoshvu Iyamrit Dimit Chilu Af Harav Hayim Alami L'Talmidim Me'umad Nimtza to Moshe Ma'umad, the Echi Tachin to Moshe Ma'umad, the Aaron and Bon of Afshakar Lomdu. Oh, maybe he's going to ask my question. Let's see. Udvar Tzarch Bir, the Afghan Mitchila Hayulomdu, Lemaidim Allah Ma'umad, Lemaidim, I think he's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu as the Malamid. Haremi Kevon Shekol Echad Lomdomi Moshe, Dali Pa'amim. Havile Lamod Kol Adalit Pa'omim Shalom Du Mimosha Yeich Mutar Lahem Leishev Shalom Du Shara Pa'omim Mimosha. As we said, we made a distinction between Torah Shebaksav and Torah Shebal Peh, and Torah Shebal Peh doesn't require Amida. Let's assume that the Mishnah Melech is unaware of this. So why was it that the Talmidim were allowed to sit? According to the Mishnah Melech, every single time Moshe taught the Torah, he would have to stand. So why would the Talmidim be allowed to sit? And again, the Mishnah doesn't tolerate that possibility that Moshe stood and the Talmidim sat. Therefore, he assumes that Moshe Rabbeinu the Malami doesn't have to stand, and that would support the Rambam Shita. Maybe he means in the Habamim, since the Mishnah is saying, if you disagree with the Rambam and you insist that even the Malami has an obligation to stand, then it comes out paradoxically that the Malamed is standing and the Talmidim is sitting. So now we have a problem. Why should the Talmidim be sitting?
Is that only with Moshe?
Right, if he's not accepting the distinction between Torah Shebaksav and Torah Shebal Peh, so why should the Talmidim be sitting? Right, that didn't seem to bother the mind of the Mishnah Melech. He says, The Mishnah doesn't blink about that. Although, again, there's a theoretical possibility that that Moshe Rabbeinu would have to stand, and the Mishnah finds that unacceptable, because how could Moshe be standing when they're sitting? And why are they sitting? He says because they already were Makabal the Torah. Lachash Shana Bo Moshe Pirko is then they could have already Yeshiva. The Kfar Lomad Ma'umad, on the first round he was standing, and Viachach Yosha. Now he's allowed to sit. That doesn't bother the Mishnah Melech. What bothers the Mishnah Melech is that Moshe Rabbeinu would have to stand. I'm not clear. Does anybody know why he insists that Moshe Rabbeinu would have to stand? Right? If, let's say, we reject the Rambam, and we hold that based on this pasuk, Rabbi Avos Joshua, the Melamed has to stand. As far as the Talmidim, that's a din in Kabbalah Satorah. When it comes to Kabbalah Satorah, since they were ready to fulfill the Kabbalah Satorah in the first round, and they stood, so now they're not involved in Kabbalah Satorah. But as far as Mesirah Satorah, I guess he's assuming like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu, every time he has a new audience, it's a new round of Mesirah Satorah. And if there's a requirement of Amida b'shas Mesirah Satorah, it's not enough that he transmitted the Torah to so and so. The game is not over yet. It's not ball game over. He now has a new chiv of Mesirah Satorah to another group, and for that he would have to stand. But now we're saying that all right, Itamar is going to have to stand on the second round. Moshe Rabbeinu was standing to transmit the Torah to Itamar and Elazar. Right, that's fine. But now Aaron is sitting on his left, and why is Aaron sitting? And that's mefurish in the brice of the Ketzah of Seder Mishnah. He's sitting because he already was Makabal the Torah, and he already fulfilled his requirement of Amida in the first round of Kabbalah Satorah. He now is not involved in the endeavor of Kabbalah Satorah. Therefore, he doesn't have to stand. But I think what's odd here, says the Mishnah Melech, is that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to stand in order to be Moshe of the Torah, and yet Aaron is sitting to be Makabal the Torah, because he was already Makabal the Torah.
What's the problem?
I don't know. I'm not sure. He doesn't like it. He said, I'll read it to you one more time. He says, Eich yitochin de Moshe ha'yum ha'umad v'Aaron shekvar lomad ha'yoshet. I guess maybe he means that's a pegiah in Kavanat Torah of the Rav, maybe he means. So it's, on the one hand, the Rav is obligated to stand because of his obligation vis-a-vis the Torah of Kavanat Torah. On the other hand, the Talmidim have a mitzvah of covenant to the Rav. So how could they be sitting while the Rav is standing? Maybe, I don't know. V'nira, let's try to finish this up. Tehine ha-gemara parach, kosev echad omer v'yeshev bahar, v'kosev echad omer anokhi amadati bahar. Omer Rav, Omeid, Velomeid, Yosef, Vishonish. This is before Rava. Rava had a different answer, Rachos and Koshos. But initially, the Gemara gives Rav's answer, Omeid, Velomeid, Yosef, Vishonish. Meaning the first time around, he had to stand. When he's reviewing it, he sits. Pirish Rashi, Kisha Hoya Lomeid, Halacha, Mipia Gvura, Hoya Omeid. Right, that's the first time around. Oh, this he did on his own, right? It wasn't that Hashem taught him the second time. He reviewed his lesson. Is Rashi, the Kol Eino El Torah Talmid Mirav. What does he see in this Rashi? Rashi is saying, so what that which he's studying on his own, privately, but when he's receiving the Torah and he's a Talmud, then he has to stand. So Niravidivri Rashi, that this whole requirement of standing is only when you're studying Torah. So if I'm on my own studying Torah, I don't have to stand. Because of the Yisoda Din Amida, having Mishum Kavod Torah, is Afilu Kori Bein Olivein Atzmo, Tzorch Lamod. In Kain Afk Shalomid Levado, Esma Shalomad Kvar, Havile Lemosha Lamod. Moshe should have been standing. So how does Rav justify the fact that Moshe was Yoshe Bahar? Based on the fact that he's reviewing his lesson, what happened to Kavod Torah? Kavod Torah should apply whether he's sitting and receiving the Torah or whether or not he's studying Torah on his own. Even if it's Beino Levein Atzmo, Tzorech Lamod, because of Kavod Torah. So why does Moshe say, I sat?
Because he received it from Hashem. And then he becomes the teacher that always has to stand because he received it from Hashem. Everybody else received it from him and down.
And therefore there's no Kavod Torah? We're trying to justify Moshe sitting on the second round. That's the thrust of this Rav. Rav wants to say that since Moshe Rabbeinu was only Yoshev Vishoneh, and Rashi seems to imply that since he's Yoshev Vishoneh alone, he doesn't have to stand.
He's not teaching.
No, but I'm asking, what happened to Kavod Torah? You know, if the halacha, let's assume for the time being, that the requirement of Amida is because of your Kavod of the Torah, that should apply whether you're learning it from someone else or you're studying it on your own.
But apparently that's not. It's not the standing is Kavod Torah. Maybe the standing is
Kavod for the Rav.
For the Rav, who learned from the Mipi HaGvura.
Let's see what he says. And then, Achei Nira D'yesh Lefarish Omeid V'Lomeid Hainusha Moshe Lomid Vitchila Pamrishona Vihaya Omeid. Ava Yoshev Vishona Ratzalom Shoya Chose Vilomi Mekarishbacha Yoshev. Even if he was learning it directly from Hashem, since it was the second time around, he doesn't require Amida.
Right.
Dine Marshabi Erevin, Havi Me Amedrish, the Moshe Nami Lomdom in Piagvur Dalid Pam. So that even the review was directly from Hashem. And yet, Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting. The Siv Oz Rav Yisprenim. Okay, fine. Ube Pam Rishona Shalom and Oya Omeid. Ube Shara Pa'omim Oya Yoshev. Ulefi Zed. The Moshe Gufa Kishalom Ad Shara Pa'omim Oya Yoshev. Ve Din Amido Rak Nema Ube Pam Rishona Shalomid. Is Asi Shapid Ube Tchilok Shalimdo Lomdo Mi Moshe Lomdo Mi Moshe Omdu. The Rak Peshara Pa'omim in the Chazorah when they reviewed it. Is that's be yeshiva. So let me just think, is this presentation a defense for the Mishnah Lamelech? What was the kash on the Mishnah Lamelech? Mishmael says, how is it possible for Moshe to be standing and the Talmina to be sitting? So the question is that even though Mitchila they were standing, right? If you're telling me that Moshe has to stand all four times, then all the Talmidim would have to stand. How is it that they were allowed to sit in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu? So now he's assuming, no, Moshe Rabbeinu only had to stand on the first round. But with regard to Shinun, meaning Chazara, there's no requirement of Amida. So when they learned it from Moshe Rabbeinu the first time around, they would stand. But any time that they reviewed it, they would not have to stand. That's what he says. All right, let's just spend the last few minutes that we have here on Inyan Yud Beis. And he wants to talk about Mishloach Manos. Just by way of introduction, he says the following, that, just one second, just want to make sure I got the right Indian here. Yeah. If the purpose of Mishloach Manos is what we call ribui reus, right, to intensify and upgrade the friendship level, then it's very critical that this gift that you're sending to someone is given for the right reasons. Meaning, sometimes you send a gift to someone as Khalifa, you know, because you have to flatter him. That's not the purpose of Mishloach Manos. So in order to explain this, and why this mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is so special, and reflects on the very essence of Purim, he says we have to go back to a pasuk in Chumash and the Chazal on this pasuk. In the parasha of the Dalet Melachim, in Bereishis Yudalet, each melech is connected to a certain nation, with the exception of Tidal. In the case of Tidal, the pasuk says Melech Goyim. He's the king over nations. Now, Chazal interpret that these four Melachim are representatives of the four Malchios, the four kingships that will subjugate the Jewish people during its history. In the case of Tidal, he's not connected to his particular nation, but rather he's a general king, so to speak, over all the nations. Now, who is Tidal? So the Gemara tells us that Tidal is Romi, amongst the four different kingships that will subjugate the Jewish people. The fourth one, the last one, is Romi, and that's Tidal. Tidal represents Romi, the fourth of the Malchios. And there's something very unique about the hatred of the Jewish people of Romi. Romi is going to be a golus which reaches out, so to speak, to all the nations on the face of the earth to get everyone involved in the hatred of the Jew. And that's called Lishloach Tronya L'chol HaUmos. That means to spread
negative propaganda.
Yeah, what's called negative propaganda? Could we think of another word? There is a word in English for Tronya, but I can't remember it now. So we'll call it poisonous propaganda against the Jewish people. That's what's unique about the anti-Semitism of Romi. It's not just that we hate the Jewish people, but we want to get all the nations on the face of the earth to hate the Jewish people.
Achdus.
There's an achdus of hatred, and that's called Shlichas Tronia. They propagate, you know, false libel accusations against the Jew, and they propagate it throughout the entire earth. And this is the golus that we're suffering from today. And this golus sometimes is known as Golus Edom, and other times it's known by the name of Golus Romi. Whenever you see the word Romi, you know the way Chazal understood that we're talking about Hafatzas or Hispashtus Teronia of Edom over the entire earth. So there's Edom, which is one country, but they become Romi, it's just a change of name, when we're indicating how they play the major role to teach anti-Semitism, spread anti-Semitism throughout the world. He doesn't use the word anti-Semitism, that's my choice of words. He used the word Isnagdus, or Sina, or Trunya. Biromi, Miskala Edom Bitar Melech Goyim. When Chazal say that Tidal, who's Melech Goyim, represents the fourth golus of Romi, what they mean is that now they spout anti-Semitism against all the Goyim. That's why he's called Melech Goyim. That's the Romi identification of Edom. Edom as Romi means it's not just enough that we hate the Jewish people, we want to get everyone to hate the Jewish people. B'Romi Mizgala Edom B'tar Melech Goyim B'loshen Rabin. That's what Romi is all about. Now, at what point in history does Edom become Romi for the first time? That's Paras. That's this terrible situation at the time of Haman. What happens is that Haman gets Achashverosh to agree to send out Terunya to all the nations of the world. That Terunya describes the Jewish people, as you can imagine, in very negative terms. They're guilty of this, they're guilty of that, you know, their fifth column, they're always plotting to undermine the government, they're interested in their own selves, and they insult us, and they don't care, you know, whatever anti-Semitism and whatever Lashon Hara you could propagate about the Jewish people, that was incorporated, encoded in a letter, which Haman, under the auspices of Achashverosh, was able to spread out. And elsewhere, in one of the earlier Mamorim, we spoke about this, so to speak, partnership between Achashverosh, representing one of the four Malchios, and Haman, representing Amalek. And Amalek is not considered part of the Dalet Malchios, but part of the Zayin Amamin. I don't know if you remember any of that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the moment in history where both Zayin Amamin and Arba Malchios joined forces together to annihilate the Jewish people.
What do you mean, Haman Shaleach Terunya El Achashverosh?
In other words, what happened was, I think that Haman wrote a letter in which he described the Jewish people in very negative terms. Right. He sent it to Achashverosh, and Achashverosh gave Haman the okay to spread it out amongst all the nations.
You said this was when Adam became Rome, but this has nothing to do with Adam or Rome. This is before them. This is Mede and Persian. There's no connection between Adam becoming Rome.
So I don't know exactly the answer to your question. Maybe Achashverosh is a descendant of Esav. I don't know. Certainly Haman is a descendant of Esav. And Esav is Rome or Edom. So now he quotes a famous Medrash Rabbah. The Medrash Rabbah, which you've heard over and over again, the Ramban builds, you know, Tilei Tilim of commentaries based on this, says that whenever the Zikne Yisrael, like Revi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and others, had to deal with the Romans and try to, you know, soften the decrees against the Jewish people, they would always first learn Parshas Vayishlach. That's the way we prepare ourselves for this encounter, this confrontation with the adversaries, with the enemies. Why is it so? Because Yaakov Avinu confronts Esav in Parshas Vayishlach. And the different ways that he, right, in three ways and so forth and so on. Now, one of the things that Yaakov does in Parshas Vayishlach is he sends a mincha to Esav. Maybe I can quote the pasuk itself here if he has it. Yeah, in Bereishis Lamed Beis it says, Mincha li Esav hi shlucha. So this is the first time that any Jew fulfilled the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. Okay? I'm joking with you, but I mean it seriously, because the whole point of this essay is to give us an insight into what Mishloach Manos is all about, and our mitzvah Mishloach Manos is the exact opposite of Yaakov Avinu's Mishloach Manos to Esav. He says, "Ma'aseh simul abanim." What do we learn from Parshas Vayishlach? What we learn from Parshas Vayishlach is what we call chanifa. That sometimes what we have to do is we have to flatter the guy, you know, send him a bouquet of flowers, you know, send him a mincha like Yaakov Avinu did. That's called Doron, I think, in the Lashon of Chazal. Rashi quotes it. Okay, now, as a general rule, when you give a gift to someone, it's an act of love and friendship. Hanosein matonel chavero, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Daf Yud, tzarech lahodio. Why? Because otherwise, if you don't tell them that you sent them the gift, then you undermine the whole point of the gift. The whole point of the gift is to create an avon reyus. You have to notify him that it came from you. Aval. But imagine the following scenario, or the following a description of the following person. This is a person who always has to send gifts to his enemies. He's always in the line of Hanifa. Mm-hmm. For example, he says, Oncho shel badoi. He says, if a person is consistently misleading his recipients, meaning he's always in the process of sending them gifts, but they realize that he's not genuine about it. He really hates them, but he's doing it for flattery. He says, ultimately, this is like the boy who cried wolf. When he finally gets around to give a gift out of a sincerity, because he really, really feels love, nobody's going to pay attention to him. Is kach onshel shel badoi zeh? What's the natural built-in punishment to someone who's a badoi, who's constantly just flattering someone by sending gifts, is that afilu b'shosh omer emes, even when he sends a gift and he really means it, ain't shomim lo, nobody pays attention to him. Al kein, therefore, also onam, this person that we're describing, hamuchach lios rogil b'chiluk matonos b'ma'alach shel chanifa, shuv afilu b'sholech matonos shel yedidus emes, ain't shomim lo. Shekein ain't shel onam azeh, shiluach matonos, it's not a gilui of Ava, but rather it's Hanifa. Al kein bi also matzav shem bo sholeh ha-mahal shel minchas esa, minchal yesa. He says that if we go back to the situation of Esa, of Yaakov, facing his adversary, confronting Esa, then he's in a situation where he just has to send a minchal yesa for flattery. Is then, in that matzav, in that historical period, Pogem b'taras ha'ava nimtzis b'shiluach matonos. His mishloach monos is going to be a false mishloach monos. It doesn't have any sort of tara and emes, because a tara and emes of mishloach monos would be when there's no chanif at all. But he's facing his adversary, sending them gifts. He's always in a mindset of chanifa. Now we get to the mitzvah of mishloach monos on Purim. Why is mishloach monos so connected and reflected with the essence of Purim? Because what happens on Purim? Purim is the Yom, this is the day that we commemorate the fall of Edom, meaning of Haman. Yom Avdon Kocho Shel Edom. In other words, we don't have to go to Rome to plead on behalf of the Jewish people, because we've now defeated our enemies. And therefore, we're not involved in learning Parshas Vayishlach to prepare ourselves for a confrontation with our enemies. We don't recognize the experience of Lishloach Mincha L'Yesa. Is therefore, our matonos are genuine. They're not matonos of Chanifa. And therefore, the purpose of Mishloach Monos is going to be achieved, that we're sending the matono with MS, with Tara, for the right purposes. No one's going to suspect us of Chanifa. We're not being accused of the Mincha that Yaakov sent to Esav. And that's the essence of the mitzvah of Mishloach Monos. So let's just summarize. He's saying the following, that when we have to face Edom, when Yaakov has to face Esav, our matanos have to be for the sake, we're going to learn it from Yaakov in the parasha of Esav, for the sake of Chanifa. They're not genuine. And therefore, there's no way that our matanos could be considered as ribui ava v'reis. But on Purim, which in its very essence represents the downfall of our enemies, where we no longer have to learn the parasha of Yaakov and Esav in Vayishlach, and therefore our gifts are gifts that are sincere, genuine, out of a sense of love, that's what the essence of Mishloach Monos is all about. And finally, with this we'll conclude. What is Mordechai saying to Esther? You remember when he sends the word about the Gzeir of Haman? He says to her, "Al tadami b'nafshech limoleit beis hamelech." Right? I don't have the whole pasuk, but anyway, don't fool yourself into thinking that you could guys yourself and save yourself because you're married to the king. So Rav Hutna says, "I don't understand. That's a terrible accusation of Mordechai to Esther. I mean, it's impossible to take this pasuk kipshuto. I myself, honestly, have been bothered by this pasuk. For every Purim, I get bothered by this pasuk that Mordechai is accusing Esther of trying to just simply save herself." Ella, he says, no, that there's a different way of understanding this parasha, and he says there's a special koach of tefillah in a case of hamispal biad chaver vu tzarich liyoso davar. This is a Gemara in Masechta Bava Kama Daf Tzadi Beis. There's a power in such a tefillah. I should have been praying for myself. I should have been putting all my energies into praying for myself because I need it no less than you do, but instead, I give over that power of prayer for you, for your benefit. And In such a case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says such a tefillah is so beautiful that you selflessly pray for someone else, that you will get a special power, and Hashem will be hu nena tefillah. He says the following: you cannot compare a regular classic tefillah to a tefillah of a lev nishbar, of a broken heart. And this is based on a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin that says, Masechta Sota, that there's a separate madrega of a tefillah of a lev nishbar. Now, normally a person is a lev nishbar when he's praying on his own behalf because he needs a Yeshua. But if a person overlooks his own needs and he has the same sense of a lev nishbar because his friend is suffering and therefore he's mispal biad chavero, then that bakasha has a tremendous power of tefillah, of koach tefillah. The oso adam shemispal bekocho zel l'tovas chavero, he's taking a special, he's investing in his tefillah a very special power. And now we go back to Mordechai and Esther. He says the following: Zeu pesher dvar ha'ora shel Mordechai li'Esther. Al tidami benafshich li'molet. In other words, you have two choices now. You can pray on your own behalf, or you can pray on behalf of Knesset Yisrael. Your prayer on behalf of Knesset Yisrael will come from a recognition that you yourself need this prayer, because you're not going to be able to survive this. You know, you'll also be included in the annihilation of the Jewish people and the decree of Haman. But then I want you to go ahead and pray on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Forget about yourself. Just pray on behalf of Klal Yisrael. You yourself are in danger, but don't overlook that. And what Mordechai is trying to teach Esther is, I don't want you, heaven forbid, to lose and forfeit that Mila of Hamispal Biad Chavero, Vuhutzarach Lioso Dover. That tefillah is very unique when a person selflessly prays with a lev nishbar on behalf of someone else, even though he needs the prayer no less than his friend does. And therefore, Al Tadabi Ben Afsheikh, realize that you yourself will not survive this decree. Therefore, you are already considered Tzarech Lo Sodover. Once you have the getter of Tzarech Lo Sodover, once you recognize that, then if you have a lev nishbar on behalf of Klal Yisrael, then your tefillah, your segulas ha-tefillah of a lev nishbar on behalf of someone else, forfeiting your own tefillah for yourself, is tala tefillaseich al Knesset Yisrael. It will be a tefillah that will be accepted on high on behalf of Knesset Yisrael. Okay then?
Yeah.
So both sides will stop.